let's stop giving the dog a bad name to hang it. All the things that have been said are very clear.
When you say it's not true, what exactly are you contesting?
We are contesting the losses they are just mentioning that are skyrocketing. For example, you mentioned the powers that are not, the power that is not stable, and you ask him a question about it. And he's telling you where they have to meet the IPPs, negotiate with them, talk to them, and for them to have. That is what we are expecting certain things to be done. And you are talking about engagement. Mm. In this aspect, you met the committee. We came out with certain proposals, which we also believe as major stakeholders who have been here for all this while, that these are the challenges that need to be resolved. Nobody's listening to us. But it's just like we are bent on dividing ECG, the whole ECG sector, into four segments and give it to each. Listen, hear what he said. I'm telling you today, let's everybody should just follow it up. And the whole Ghana should listen to us. That what they are doing is to go back and buy this state organization, ECG, for themselves. Today, I am telling you, in the near future, you see them becoming the owners of this company. When they were in power, they cannot manage it. Mm. Because the same people say they cannot manage it.
But what is your fear, really? Because the minister has assured that you will not lose your jobs.
Who will not lose his job? Okay, so the same way, Telecom. When Telecom was about to be sold, they told us that nobody will lose his job. Now go to Telecom. Check how many Ghanaians are working in Telecom. The same way when Ghana Airways was about to be sold, they told us nobody will lose his job. Go there. Go and check how many Ghanaians are working there. And this is what they keep telling us. And you are in Ghana.
So you're fighting for your personal interest. This is not about the national interest.
This is sometimes it's disheartening. You are a Ghanaian. How many Ghanaians today working in electricity are not really working? It's just to tell us that somebody will be is profit over if a private person want to do something and he really want to come to the terms of making money. He wouldn't care. He would do everything he want to just make money. And that is not what we are in for. Don't forget that you're a Ghanaian. Look at the number of people working. At the end of the day, what we are looking at is that how can we sustain these state-owned institutions? Don't forget that apart from we paying electricity bill, there is so much of the social part of electricity that every Ghanaian should enjoy. And that is what we keep telling them. They have a responsibility as government. You pay tax. I pay tax. Some of the money should be used to, in any way, in any form, the money should be to subsidize our energy. And they should do that. Stop looking for the easy way. They should go back, look at how best to solve it. If it is injecting capital and putting certain measurable and then KPIs for those who are in charge and those they have appointed to work and tax them.
Mm. Thank you so much, Enoch, for joining us. He is Deputy General Secretary for the Public Utilities Workers Union. And I'm handing over to Evans Mensah for Newsnight.
In the next 60 minutes here on Newsnight, President Mahama nominates 7 justices to the Supreme Court, sparking fresh controversy. Amidst process to remove Chief Justice, we hear from the opposition New Patriotic Party and also some lawyers who have all been reacting to this breaking in the last few minutes. Also tonight, opposition MPP defy growing internal calls to suspend its controversial thank you tour, which has been docked by acrimony and violence as it distances itself from the stabbing incident which triggered the withdrawal of Kennedy Japon from the tour.
Let me make this clear. The party will resist any attempt to connect the unfortunate incident that happened, the stabbing, the young man. We'll resist any attempt to connect, to make that nexus to the ongoing thank you tour.
In business, World Bank approves $125 million to help Ghana tackle climate-related agriculture losses.
And in sports, we continue our coverage of the UEFA Champions League semi-final tonight from the HR residence in Dansuman as Barcelona hosts Inter Milan at the Olympic Stadium in the first leg.
Thank you very much. We want to stay with us because we're going to bring you the very latest from the world of business and sports, plus your views and comments all here on Newsnight. 055-111-1997 is the line you want to join us on. And that breaking story coming from the presidency, we can now confirm to you that President John Dramani Mahama has nominated seven justices to the Supreme Court, which is already sparking a fair measure of controversy, especially coming in the midst of the processes that have already been triggered for the removal of the Chief Justice. And a copy of this particular memo that has now been written to the Judicial Council that I have in my hand says that, quote, pursuant to Article 1442 of the Constitution of Ghana 1992, His Excellency, the President, has nominated the following justices of the Court of Appeal to be considered for appointment to the Supreme Court. And there are seven of them. First is Justice Sir Denis Dominic Ejay, Justice Simon Subare, Justice Senyor Jamefe, Justice Kweku Teria Akabwafo, Justice Philip Bright Mensah, Justice Janapari Bartels Kojo, and Justice Hafizata Amiaboba. Seven justices of the Superior Court who have today been nominated for consideration by the council. And the second part of this letter says, attached are their CVs. I trust that this council will expedite action on their considerations. It says, please accept the assurances of my highest consideration. It's signed by Callistus Mahama, the secretary to the president, and the also copied to the acting Chief Justice, Judicial Council, Accra. Also attention, His Lordship, Justice Paul Bafo Boni. Of course, you know he is the acting CJ. Also copied to the Vice President and the Chief of Staff. And so if you're just joining us, this is the breaking news we're now learning and confirmed from the Office of the President. Seven justices have now been nominated to the Supreme Court. Seven of them, Justice Denis Dominic Ejay, Justice Simon Subare, Justice Senyor Jamefe, Justice Kweku Teria Akabwafo, Justice Philip Bright Mensah, Justice Bartels Kojo, and Justice Hafizata Amelaboba. And I want to quickly get some reactions to this developing story from Frank Davis. He's the chairman of the Constitutional Legal Committee of the MPP. He joins me right now on the line. Martin Kwebu is also a lawyer. Both of them joining me as the story breaks. We're all learning about this literally in the last few minutes. Mr. Davis, your reaction to this?
Yeah, thank you very much, Evans. Good evening once again to your esteemed viewers and listeners. I'd rather, Evans, you introduce me as a senior member of the bar, so far as this matter is concerned. I mean, chairman of the Constitutional Legal Committee of the party, everybody knows, but I'm speaking as a senior member of the bar now. So I think it'll have been best to introduce me that time. But thank you. Interesting times ahead for the judiciary. I mean, of course, nobody can take away the rights of the president to nominate justices to the bench of the Supreme Court. So the constitutional prerogative is that of the president. The names that you have mentioned, from Sir Denis to Hafizata Amalaboba, I have had the privilege of practicing before all of them as justices of the High Court, the Court of Appeal, and now that they are being elevated to the Supreme Court. I mean, it is the expectation of every justice of the Superior Court of Judicature to be in the highest court of the land. So I can only congratulate them at this stage. And it's the expectation of reward that sweetens labor. But, well, I don't know.
What do you make of the timing of this?
Yeah, that's where I was coming to. You know, I'm at pains to say this. But the comments of His Excellency the President at the forum where he addressed a group of lawyers who have categorized themselves as NDT lawyers, he made certain remarks, and that some lawyers should, amongst in their midst, should, as it were, aspire to be on the bench so that there will be a balancing equation of the number of justices that His Excellency the President and Akufo-Addo had appointed onto the bench of the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeal and the High Court. So if on the back of that, the President should at this stage nominate 7 names for consideration by the Judicial Council to the Supreme Court. The optics for me is for Ghanaians to judge. Hey, I cannot. So far as the President has the constitutional prerogative to do that, it is in his rabbit so to do. But how many justices do we have in the Supreme Court now? About, if I'm not mistaken, about 11, 12. So if you add 7, we are going to have about 19 justices. That is quite a number. But, hey, Evans, I'm not the president. I'm a trained lawyer and a citizen, but I leave the better judgment to Ghanaians. Because if the idea is to balance the equation, to put as many justices in the Supreme Court or other courts just because President Akufo-Addo has done, when there are vacancies on the Supreme Court bench, yes, every president has the constitutional prerogative and rights to nominate and elevate justices not only from the Court of Appeal, but from the High Court, depending on your industry and scholarship, you can be elevated to the Supreme Court. But the timing is a bit challenging. That's all I can say for now.
Thank you very much. That there is Frank Davis, Chair of the Constitutional Legal Committee of the MPP. I still have with me Martin. But Martin, I'm curious to learn what your reaction is to it. First of all, when you first heard that the President already, less than 120 days into his administration, has nominated 7 justices to the Supreme Court, what was your initial reaction, Martin? Hello, Martin Pebu. Okay, we may have lost him, but we'll bring him back for his reaction. And as you may know by now, a major developing story breaking in the last few minutes. President John Dramani Mahama has nominated 7 justices to the Supreme Court. And he also is asking the Judicial Council to expedite their consideration as a matter of urgency. The 7, if you're just joining us, are Justice Dennis Dominic Ejeh, Justice Simon Subare, Justice Senyo Jamefe, Justice Theria Akabuafo, Justice Bright Mensah, Justice Battels Kweju, Justice Hafiz Atta Amaleboba. These are the 7 justices of the court. Court of Appeal who have now been elevated to the Supreme Court. This is a nomination. So the Judicial Council will have to consider the nomination that has been done by the President, and then it will go to the rest of the processes. We'll examine the constitutionality of this action pretty shortly. And thankfully, Martin Kwebu is with me. Martin, what's your initial reaction when you first learned of this?
Yeah, so I kind of was a bit surprised. Yeah, surprised because, you know, we had been making arguments a few months ago that before the numbers are increased, we should have a national conversation. So I'm like, hey, now can we stick by previous words or we are going to change, you know? So that's a very serious matter because, you know, when Chief Justice Tokondo presented that list of five justices to the president for appointment to the Supreme Court, we came out and made a lot of noise. Amongst some of the arguments were the fact that before the number is increased beyond the conventional 15, there should be a national conversation. So I know that that list that had five was going to shoot the number beyond 15. That's 14 justices plus the chief justice, making a 15. So that list of five was going to take it beyond the 15. And the importance of the 15 is that during President Kufuor's time, under the African peer review mechanism, we were last for going beyond the conventional 14, 15 things. So meaning that, and even in the GBA case versus Attorney General, etc., yes, there were references to it. So right now, with the list being seven, and also some people are appearing to be far junior than some justices who have been on the Court of Appeal for longer, etc., I can see that the debate is going to be very robust, very, very robust. But it's good. It shows that citizens are getting more involved. Because when you look on the list, the people that we all have been hard done by are three. Number one is Justice Senior Jamefe. Number two, Justice Denise J. And then number three, Justice Barry. But beyond that, the other people, there's going to be a lot of arguments, the same arguments we're making, because people were making arguments that they are taking people who are far junior to us, to the Supreme Court. So, and especially, I know Senior Jemefe and Denise Ejie and Kodia case, it was so palpably wrong. We felt that, no, why are you, I mean, if you thought they are not competent, which is not the argument, then at least bring out facts that we show so. Mm-hmm. So all the arguments we made a few months ago, the chicken have come home to roost. So we just have to repeat the same argument. We can't say to want to, you know, change the hymn sheet. If we change, we'll be caught in a web of hypocrisy. So for now, I can't change my hymn sheet.
So repeat your position again for me then.
So we had said that, look, if you're going beyond 15, then there should be a national conversation. And this one has dates way back to Adam Smith. Yeah, you see quotations from Adam Smith saying that in the matter, the economics, talking also about judicial matters. You see a paper that HPT prepared, the chairman of the Constitutional Review Commission, where Adam Smith said that, look, when it comes to appointing justices, citizens should be involved in the conversation. So we feel left out. We should not be involved in this conversation, especially as it appears this number will shoot it way beyond the 15 justices. So the convention is that we have 14 Supreme Court justices plus the Chief Justice, 15, right? Some even dispute it. Some say it's just 14 plus with the Chief Justice included. Others say it's 14 justices plus the Chief Justice, making it 15. So whichever way, if you add the seven, we are going way beyond 14 or 15.
So do I hear you say you are opposed to this action, this nomination, because it's fundamentally going to leave the bench with more than 15 justices?
Yes, to the extent that we've not had the national conversation. That is what we asked for the last time. We said, let's have a national conversation. If you are going to break a convention, let's sit around the table and then debate it robustly, right? Yes, issues of public interest should be robustly debated, right? Robust arguments back and forth. You see, Kweku Asare also did a long paper. Please dig them up. Let's read. You see all the arguments he presented. So basically, Evans, we are caught by our words and our arguments a few months ago. It's not, we cannot lightly shift our arguments. No, nothing is changed to warrant the shifting of the argument.
Give me your quick thoughts.
Let the public weigh in.
Give me your quick thoughts on the what has happened tonight with the nomination. Is that due process?
You see, if you talk about formal due process, yes. But I'm making the strong argument that because the number is going beyond the conventional 14 or 15, we had asked for a national conversation.
My question is an attempt to move from there. I think you make that point very clearly. I'm just curious to know, the president is appears to be initiating the process and nominating and asking the Judicial Council to consider. Is that what the process says, dictates? Is that what the Constitution dictates?
Oh, yes, yes. So, yes, there's a case called this is GBA, okay, versus Attorney General. The last one, that was when they were about appointing Professor Mensah Bonsoenkou, right? Yes. And then the GBA went to court, blah, blah, Mafusang. No, that was a Mafu, not Mensah Bonsoenkou. See, it was a Mafusang this round. That's the one that brought Foaman in. And then Mafusang was one of the persons that the bar felt should have been included, but he was not included. So the GBA went to court. And then the Supreme Court said, so you are interested in, is that due process? Yes. The Supreme Court said, yes. A due process. The president can nominate. The bar can also nominate. Right? Yes. So there's that. Then the Judicial Council. So it goes to the Judicial Council. Then the Judicial Council looks at them. And then advises the president. So the good thing now is that it says that the president cannot go outside the list that the Judicial Council will present.
So what it means is that although the president has sent seven, the Judicial Council can come back and say we believe only five really merit an appointment to the Supreme Court, and the president has no choice and to stay within that limit.
Yes. Yes, and within that five, that one, he has a liberty to maybe choose number five and number four and leave out number one, two, three, if he wishes. If that one that presents an interesting scenario, maybe in future, they will look at how to further tighten.
Martin, thank you very much. And that is Martin Kwebuda giving us his thoughts on the breaking news coming in the last 30 minutes. Also, where the nomination of seven justices to the Supreme Court. As I speak right now, there is another developing story around the former National Signal Bureau boss, Kwabena Adubuahene, who has tonight also been charged with 11 counts, including stealing, defrauding by false pretense and causing financial loss in that $7 million contract scandal. The Attorney General just left court a short while ago. He's addressing a news conference right now. I want to take you live there.
One Mildred Donko, a former employee of UMB Bank, who resigned just in time to join in the criminal enterprise, and a company called Advantage Solutions Limited, a holding company owned by Mr. Adubuahene and his wife, which received a substantial portion of the funds and was used as a conduit for funneling the funds into other companies owned by them. These other companies are Vertex Properties Limited, Vertex Solutions, and of course, the famous BNC Communications Bureau Limited, which was, if you remember, that was a vehicle that was used to steal the 49,100,000 Ghana cedis from the national security accounts. Based on the evidence on the docket, we have charged Mr. Adubuahene with stealing
3 counts of stealing, 1 count of defrauding by false pretenses, another count of willfully causing financial loss to the state, another count of using public office for profit and money laundering. His wife, Angela Ajay-Boateng, has been charged with conspiracy to steal, collaboration to commit the crime of using public office for private benefit or profit, conspiracy to commit money laundering and money laundering. In the case of Mildred Donko, we have charged her with 2 counts of conspiracy to commit money laundering and money laundering. The same goes for the company known as Advantage Solutions. Ladies and gentlemen of the press, my fellow countrymen and women, I am keenly aware of the criticisms that were leveled against me after my March 20, 2025 press conference. In particular, some of our compatriots accused me of judging Mr. Dubohe and his dear wife prior to filing charges, and others opined that what I said of them should have been left to the courts to decide. I respectfully disagree for a number of reasons. The first is that I said nothing at that press conference that suggested, even remotely, that their guilt had been predetermined. Far from that. As the Attorney General of this Republic, I am the first to acknowledge that no matter how watertight the evidence of a prosecutor is, the accused is still entitled to be presumed innocent until proven guilty. That is a principle enshrined in Article 19 of our Constitution. And I cannot go against that cardinal principle. The second reason why I disagree with those of my fellow countrymen and women who think that the matters are dealt with at these press conferences should be left to the courts is that the Constitution requires that we act, at least in public office, with probity and accountability. I see these press briefings, including the one I'm having today, as a way of breathing life into those cardinal values of our Constitution. Lastly, I think that there is absolutely nothing wrong with a prosecutor exhibiting confidence in his case. With particular reference to the case and the review, the diligent investigations by the Economic and Organized Crimes Office led by Mr. Raymond Archer gives me a high level of hope and confidence that, all things being equal, I will obtain convictions on most, if not all, of the charges that I have preferred today. Besides the documentary evidence involving bank statements, deposit slips, check numbers, and so on and so forth, we have persons with deep knowledge of the matter who have agreed to testify at the trial. Persons with very deep knowledge, primary persons who were close to the action, have agreed, after having been, you know, interrogated, you know, about what they know, they have agreed to testify in this matter. Ladies and gentlemen of the media, my fellow countrymen and women, between March 20, 2025, when I announced the arrest and detention of Ms. Edubuahi and his accomplices, and now, there has been some speculation as to whether my press conference was yet another piece of political propaganda. Some media houses actually claimed that I had been deceived into holding the press conference, and that I had in turn misled His Excellency John Dramani Mahama, the President of the Republic. Let it be known that, unlike some presidents in the past who were misled, His Excellency John Dramani Mahama is on top of his brief and cannot be misled. Indeed, if any appointee would mislead the president, it would not be his Attorney General. So everything I have told the president, I have evidence to prove it, and the docket is replete with documentary evidence of the wrongdoing that has been investigated. Having said that, I wish to let it be known that the delay in filing charges came about because our diligent investigation team
came across yet another scheme hatched by Mr. Edu Bohin, this time involving Ghana Water Company Limited. This criminal enterprise involved the purported provision of secured internet services to Ghana Water Company Limited by the erstwhile Bureau of National Communications, now National Signals Bureau. The contract document showed that Ghana Water was to pay BNC, that is the National BNC, the sum of 650,000 Ghana cedis every 2 weeks for secure internet services from BNC, that is the Bureau of National Communications. However, for purposes of the payment, Kobinan Edu Bohin provided the account details of his company, BNC Communications Bureau Limited, to Ghana Water, which religiously paid for the internet services. In other words, every 2 weeks, when 650,000 Ghana cedis of money from Ghana Water left the bank accounts of Ghana Water, instead of going to the National Signals Bureau account, it went to the account of a company known as Bureau of National Communications, owned by Kobinan Edu Bohin and his wife. Okay? And then they did what they wanted to do with the money. So for every month, Ghana Water paid 1.3 million Ghana cedis to Kobinan Edu Bohin and his company in exchange for internet services provided by the government. Because remember that the National Signals Bureau is a government agency. Now, come to think of it, that the government agency is providing secure internet services to Ghana Water Limited, a limited liability company solely owned by the same government. And Ghana Water is spending money that they do not have, okay, to pay for internet services at that cost, 1.3 million Ghana cedis every month. In fact, the figure rose to 1.5 million Ghana cedis every month at the close of our investigations. Now, you remember that in 2020, Bureau of National Communications became National Signals Bureau. And so, because the contract documents stipulated that the payments be made to Bureau of National Communications, Ghana Water then demanded that the check payments be made to National Signals Bureau because of the change in the corporate identity of BNC. What then happened was that any time the check was made out to National Signals Bureau and it landed in the accounts of National Signals Bureau, Kobinan Edu Bohin, as director of National Signals Bureau, would then immediately write a check to himself and transfer the money. From our investigations, you can see the movement of the money. Immediately it comes from Ghana Water, he signs a check and transfers the money into his personal company account. Now, today something happened in court. Counsel for the defense told the judge that whatever I had said was a figment of my own imagination. But of course, he is entitled to earn his fee. So he can say that. I have been briefed constantly and regularly. I've seen the evidence. And anybody who knows me knows that if I haven't seen the evidence, I won't be in front of you today. I've seen the evidence. The reason why some people have opted to testify is because they know that the case is watertight. So, counsel can continue to say what he's saying, but when we present the evidence in court, he will know that this is far from being imaginative. I have a very fertile imagination, but not in this case. So, ladies and gentlemen of the media, significant progress has also been made in other investigations being conducted in relation to the oral briefs presented to me in February. The investigation by the National Intelligence Bureau have been equally thorough under the direction of his Director General, Mr. Alhassan Kipo, and guided by the team in my office, most often led by the Deputy Attorney General, Dr. Srim Sai. In respect of the SkyTrain matter, we have completed investigations and will be filing charges hopefully next week. We have established that $2 million United States of American dollars was paid by the Ghana Infrastructure Investment Fund without board approval. The only persons who knew and acted on the payment were the former CEO, Mr. Solomon Asamoah, and the former board chairman, Professor Ameyao Ekunfi. Both will be charged next week. The docket is ready. We know the charges we are filing against them, so they will be charged next week. Some of the board members have offered to testify as witnesses for the prosecution, and I am considering their offers. And usually what I do is that when you offer to testify, I sign an agreement with you and I immunize you from prosecution either today or in the future. So that is what I'm doing with those who are making offers. So if you know, if you're a whistleblower, you know of any crime that has taken place, please come. Even if you are marginally involved, I'm prepared to cut a deal, and then we can deal with the actual criminals. Now, the investigation in the National Service ghost names scandal has also progressed well, and we'll be filing charges against some of the persons involved from the first week of May, in a few days' time. Other matters such as National Cathedral, mathematical sex, senior high school Wi-Fi are also nearing completion, and dockets are being prepared for prosecutions to begin. Ladies and gentlemen of the media, my fellow countrymen and women, as your Attorney General, I wish to assure you that I have sufficient reserves of integrity to continue to perform the task assigned me by His Excellency, the President of the Republic. I have never stolen before in my life and have never received a bribe in public office. All those who have dealt with me know this for a fact, and the President would not have appointed me his Attorney General if he had questions about my personal integrity. That is why it came to me as a big surprise when the Honorable Member for Zigomoa Central, the Honorable Kwame Asare-Obeng, aka A+, took to social media to make spurious allegations against me, calling me corrupt and a thief. Besides the name calling, the Facebook post in its totality was a palpable falsehood. I was never involved in the passage of the sanitation levy, as I was not a member of the Finance Committee of Parliament, let alone to be in a position to influence the composition of the membership of the committee. And I have the Hansard as documentary support for what I'm saying. I have the votes and proceedings of Parliament. Unfortunately, I left them in the office. I think I have them here. Yes. So for the media, the report of the committee as well as the vote and proceedings are here. If you want to do some research on the matter that he alleged that I was involved and I channeled, I made sure that the membership of the committee was, changed. And then the monies from the sanitation levy were channeled to my friend and so on and so forth. I'm not friends with whoever was the beneficiary of the sanitation levy. But interestingly, A+ warned me in the post not to do anything silly and that he will come after me if I did. That is laughable. First of all, I do not act silly because I think through the consequences of my actions, not only for my person, but also for others. That is what we were taught in Notre Dame Minor Seminary, and I am proud to say, without fear of any contradiction, that I have kept faith with that principle. Secondly, the threat is laughable because I have nothing to hide. I am reliably informed that his basis of saying that I am corrupt and a thief is that I took campaign contribution from a businessman at East Legon known as Dr. Sledge, and that he also knows the people who donated pickups for my campaign. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if receiving donations for your campaign or getting a pickup for a campaign is thievery or corruption, then there are 276 thieves in Parliament, including the person who was making the allegation himself. So, ladies and gentlemen, if A Plus has any evidence of corruption or thievery against me, I am challenging you today to call a press conference and present the evidence or present it to the police to investigate me. In contrast, the media should ask him about the silly thing that I was about to do, which frightened him so much, into making that silly post about me. He should be asked what he knows about the National Service ghost name scandal and related matters. If he can give truthful answers to these questions, then Ghanaians will know why he took to social media to do what he did. But let him be warned that in my hometown of Zorun, we do not fear mud being thrown at us. On the contrary, we walk into the mud to deal with the person doing the mud slinging. And I am prepared to walk into the mud with A plus. Because what I have about him and the National Service scandal, he should come and tell you, I'm challenging him. He should come and tell you, the media, and stop cowardly hiding behind social media to make baseless allegations against people who have worked hard to earn a reputation. So, ladies and gentlemen, I think I will end here. Thank you.
And yes, live, your news tonight is on Joy 99.7 FM. That is the Attorney General addressing a major news conference at the back of a significant day for him in the court. It is the first major corruption trial of the John Mahama administration, and he went to court today with a bang. We know now that the former National Signals Bureau boss, Kwame Adubuahi, has now been charged with 11 counts, including stealing, defrauding by false pretense, and causing financial loss to the state. We just had details of that in this particular press conference. And a host of other cases, he's now promising, will all go to trial, some as soon as next week. I want to bring in my court correspondent, member of the legal desk. He just returning from the court. He was there for the drama. And there's a point that he made at this particular press conference. By the way, I thought he was done, but he's back now with a few more comments. So let's listen in. I'll come back to you, Latif. Stay with me.
The provision of secured internet services by a government agency. That is what happened. I thank you very much for your attention, and once again, sorry for the delay in addressing you. I think we can now take questions unless you are satisfied with everything I've said.
Okay, and we'll be taking questions there. We have our own Kwaku Asante in the audience, and we'll be filing questions. We are now seeing that the government official spokesperson, Felix Kwachi Fuksu, is now about to facilitate that next part of this particular press conference. But I want to come to you, Latif. One major thing he said about what happened in court today. He references the comments made by Edubuahing's lawyer, who had accused him of concocting, I guess, the evidence, and that everything else that he's been talking about since a month ago is a figment of his imagination, as the Attorney General's imagination. What really happened in court?
So, to address this particular question, emotions got high when the learned Attorney General started getting to the meat of the matter itself. When he told the judge that Edubuahi is a flight risk, because during the course of the investigations, surveillance that is available to the Attorney General's office shows that he attempted to interfere with a particular witness, which according to the Attorney General is the last witness they are trying to call in to testify in this particular matter. And this first accused person, that is Edu Buahin, attempted to interfere with that particular investigations by getting in touch with the witness or potential witness, if you like. He also made a point that there is a real danger of the first accused person leaving the country if he is granted bail, and that even though he was on bail, the surveillance, like I indicated, showed that he was trying to interfere with investigations. At that point, Attorney General came in and said the point the Attorney General was making before the court has no foundation, and that he came to court, he rushed to court based on emotions and not with any particular fact that can support his claim that he has surveillance that shows that Edu Buahin tried to interfere with investigations by getting in touch with one particular potential witness that they look forward to call and bring in. At that point, the Attorney General didn't take it lightly. He stood up and made it clear to the judge that he took exception to that claim by Attachia. It was back and forth, but the judge succeeded in calling them to order, and then proceeding continued smoothly without any altercations.
And so that just giving us context around why the Attorney General obviously had taken issue with that particular comment made by Attachia. But take me to the courtroom. We know that Edu Buahin came there today, not only himself, but he came with a wife.
Yeah.
Their pleas were taken, correct?
Exactly.
Both of them pled
not guilty to all the 11 counts. I mean, Edu Buahin was the first, followed by the wife, and then there was a third person. This third person has been on police inquiry bail. If you recall, Edu Buahin and his wife are on a court bail. But the third accused person, or A3, has been on police inquiry bail. In fact, she was granted bail before Edu Buahin and his wife were granted the court bail. All three, so we have four suspects in this case, or four accused person, I must say. The fourth accused person is the company. The company that, according to the Attorney General, Edu Buahin and his wife are both directors. And the wife is the sole shareholder of that particular company. According to Dr. Ayene, when they first started interrogating Edu Buahin and his wife, both of them denied any links or knowledge about the company. And now it has turned out after thorough investigations that indeed Edu Buahin and his wife are directors of this company, and the wife is the sole shareholder of that company. Mm. The company which they used, according to the Attorney General, to transfer and siphon monies belonging to the state and launder the money. The third accused,
speaks tonight is an allegation that yet to be proven in court, but at least that's the position of the Attorney General.
Of the Attorney General. So the fourth accused person, or the first entity, is the company. The third accused person used to be a banker. And so according to the Attorney General, she used her own expertise within the banking sector to facilitate the transfer of monies from the government coffers through to the company set up by Edu Buahin and his wife to their private company, and to the benefit of Edu Buahin, his wife, and then the third accused person.
And very quickly, Latif, also today, at some point, lawyers for Edu Buahin attempted to get the court to adjourn the case. How was that resolved? But also the question around flight risk. Did he still get bail?
He got the bail. So that was the position of Attachia, that the Attorney General couldn't provide any foundation, reasons why he thinks or suspects that Edu Buahin is a flight risk. The Attorney General then came in forcefully and made the point that surveillance available to him clearly shows that Edu Buahin is a flight risk, and he attempted to interfere with investigations. And that was the point where the judge said, okay, now I'm hearing two stories here. How to verify the story? I'm inviting you, Attachia, and the Attorney General to my office in chambers, in camera, on Friday. That is just one day apart. On Friday, the Attorney General and Attachia are expected to meet the trial judge in camera so that further disclosures are made by the Attorney General. Because he says he has surveillance that shows that Edu Buahin attempted to interfere with investigations. At that meeting with the trial judge, he is expected to make available these disclosures for the judge to make a determination whether or not to grant bail or to remand Edu Buahe into prison custody.
So presumably the Attorney General today had asked that he be remanded.
Exactly.
Together with the wife.
Exactly.
Together with the wife.
Together with the wife and the third accused person. But at a point, he changed his position. He tried to be magnanimous. So he said, I don't have a problem if the wife and the third accused person are granted bail or they still maintain their bail conditions, because as we know, the wife is on court bail and then the third accused person is on a police inquiry bail. Dr. Aini says he doesn't have a problem if the court maintains the current bail condition for the wife and then the third accused person. His challenge is Edu Buahin, the first accused person. He suspects that the guy is a flight risk and so the court should deny him bail. That determination is expected to be made on Friday after a meeting at 9 a.m. in camera between Atachia, Dr. Ayine, the Attorney General, and then the trial judge.
Okay, yeah, thank you very much, Latif. And do you want to catch the latest on this as it evolves? Attorney General is still speaking. We have more for you on Joy News Prime. It's at 7 p.m. Latif will be there. We'll also be getting the very latest from our correspondent at that particular press conference, Kuku Asante, for you. Plus, the breaking news in the last hour, the nomination of seven justices to the Supreme Court by President John Mahama, which is attracting a fair bit of controversy. We've already had lawyers, including Martin Kwebu, say they are opposed to the move because fundamentally for him, it is going to leave the Supreme Court with more than 15 judges, and he says that he believes is going to be a breach of the convention, and so he's opposed to that. You want to stay with us here on Joy 99.7 FM, go to our many social media platforms on myjoyonline.com for the very latest on these developing stories. Let's do some business now. And James Ishani is here with the latest.
All right, so coming up in business this evening, World Bank approves $125 million to help Ghana tackle climate-related agricultural losses, and Petroleum Hub Development Corporation collaborate with other agencies in the energy sector to streamline entry registration processes to attract more investors. Business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome to the new world of business. Kingdom Books and Stationery, your number one stop shop for all office essentials, Syntex tanks, and Pepsodent herbal and charcoal.
The other day, I visited Kweku at his spunky new office to congratulate him on opening his business. And man, was I impressed. The business is just moving quick. The sales, customers, everything is just working seamlessly. The secret? He said,
it's MTN Business Broadband. In this fast-paced environment, we need fast and reliable internet to support all business types. No laggy online meetings, great download and upload speeds, impeccable business management systems, all inclusive. I mean, you can have it all.
Shout! I signed on immediately.
To enable your business stay ahead and stay connected, make sure you're signed on to the best internet made just for businesses. MTN Business Broadband. Sign up today on broadband.mtn.com.gh and manage your account on my MTN app. Call 0244-308-111 for more information. We are good together everywhere you go.
MNC Group is a leading investment holding company with expertise in minerals and food commodity trading, precious minerals refinery, real estate development, and logistics and energy. With individually registered companies, our headquarters is located in Accra, Ghana, with operational offices in Dubai, UAE, Hong Kong and Guangzhou in China, Johannesburg in South Africa, Virginia in the USA, and Milan, Italy. We connect business markets and drive growth. Trust us to maximize value in every deal. Call us on 0302-551-917 or 0302-551-918 or send us an email mncgroup@mncgroupgh.com. MNC Group, totally reliant.
Son, we are so proud of you for setting up this hospital. I really love those hospital beds and waiting chairs. By the way, did you import them?
No, Dad, I didn't. I actually got them from Kindle Books and Stationery right here in Ghana.
Wow. We also bought our office supplies, safes, executive desks and chairs from Kingdom, and they gave us expert advice on how to set up our office.
Guys, that makes three of us. I also got our sofa and bedroom sets, plus our dining hall furniture for our new home from Kingdom.
Wow, Mom, that makes four of us. I usually get my stationery items from Kingdom. And my teacher also mentioned that our classroom furniture was provided by Kingdom.
So there you have it. Whenever you're thinking about setting up an office or acquiring furniture for your home, etc., Kingdom Books and Stationery should be your first point of call. With over 40 years experience in the industry, we stock and supply a wide variety of globally sourced office and home furniture, stationery and equipment. Visit our head office, Osu Akwaeji, or our office near the Osu Stadium. We're also in Tema Community 1, opposite Olam SHF, Kumase KNUSD Campus, UCC Cape Coast, and now at the Marina Mall, Airport City. Or call us 0302-764101, 764209, or 762792. Visit our website, www.kingdomgh.com.
Cavity protection.
This advert is FDA approved.
Welcome back to Business on Newsnight. I am James Shen. We settle for the details now, and the World Bank Board of Directors have approved an additional financing for the second phase of the West Africa Food System Resilience Program, aimed to help Ghana strengthen its capacity to address food insecurity and build resilient food systems. The following report has more.
The $125.9 million financing, funded by a combination of International Development Association credit and a grant from the Food Systems 2030 Multi-Door Trust Fund, will help replenish resources diverted to support farmers affected by floods and drought and to enhance sustainable intensification of tomato production. More specifically, the financing will support digital advisory services aimed at enhancing agricultural and food crisis management through improved access to data on weather patterns, nutrition, and food security, as well as better pest and disease monitoring. It will also invest in building the sustainability and adaptive capacity of the food system's productive base, promoting environmentally sound agricultural practices to strengthen resilience to environmental and economic disruptions. Additionally, the program will facilitate regional food market integration and trade to improve food security across borders.
And that was a news desk report. Now, the Petroleum Hub Development Corporation has announced that it is working closely with other agencies in the energy sector to streamline the registration process from 150 days to 30 for energy sector players seeking to operate in Ghana. According to the chief executive of the Petroleum Hub Development Corporation, Dr. Tony Oben, this will enable potential investors to navigate the system more efficiently and make informed decisions about investing in the Petroleum Hub. He spoke to Joy Business.
For this conference is to establish a one-stop shop that will handle all these permitting processes within 30 days. We want to move away from the 418 days that we saw, from the 321 days that we saw, to 30 days. If we have all the entities together, we can do that in 30 days. You know, it's, you know, in some countries, if you want to register a company, you do it in a day. In a day, you have if your document, your everything is ready, in a day, you have a registered company. In Ghana, we say 5 days, we say 3 days, but sometimes it takes a long time also. So that's what we are trying to. We are trying to break the bureaucratic inertia.
Dr. Tony Oben is the chief executive of the Petroleum Hub Development Corporation. Next, MTN Ghana has recorded total revenue of about 5.4 billion Ghana cedis, representing 39.4% increase for the first quarter of 2025 compared to the same period last year. This was contained in the company's financial performance from January to March 2025, published by the Ghana Stock Exchange. The following report highlights the key performances.
The company posted a profit after tax of over 1.7 billion cedis for the same period. The chief executive officer of MTN Ghana, Stephen Blewett, attributed the performance to strategic initiatives and investment across key business lines such as data, digital services, voice communications, and mobile money. According to the statement, service revenue increased by 39.6% to about 5.3 billion Ghana cedis compared to the same period last year.
And that was a news desk report. And that's all for business on Newsnight. I am James Chen Evans.
James, thank you very much. There is a lot happening as far as breaking news is concerned. And you want to get on to Jaw News right now because Prime Minister was starting. Get the latest for you. And the Attorney General is still speaking. And so there's a lot more you're learning. Especially, we're also learning that he is going to file fresh charges against the former Signals Bureau boss, where, as it relates to the what he alleges was siphoning of money from the state through the Ghana Water Company that was paying them monies for data services that was supposed to be paid into the official accounts, but he alleges were rather being siphoned into a private account. He says he's going to file a fresh charge against the former Signals Bureau boss. All that plus the very latest from the Supreme Court nominations on Jaw News. But for now, though, there is a major sporting activity happening right now. I'm talking about the Champions League. There's a big game many of you are interested in. It's a Champions League match between Barcelona and Inter Milan. And it's live here on Joy 99.7 FM.
FM, and you're welcome to our special coverage of the UEFA Champions League semi-final game between Barcelona and Inter Milan happening at the Olympic Stadium in Spain. And of course, we bring you live commentary of the game from the HR residence at the Dan Suman exhibition, where Daniel Cranton and Chutamaklo are on the grounds. We'll be hearing from them very shortly. And well, we hand over to them now. Big game. What's going to happen in the first half of this encounter? Daniel Cranton and Chutamaklo.
But then they refashion the attack, and what a cheeky finish there. It doesn't get any better than this. Inch perfect. Precise, and it went straight into the back of the net.
Many who will be conflicted whether or not to celebrate that has to be William Thuram, the father of Marcus Thuram. Once upon a time, a player of FC Barcelona, where his loyalties will lie tonight. We will see. But Marcus Thuram, if there were any question marks about his value to this team, he has answered those, and he's taken all of 40 seconds. He's not the only player starting for Inter tonight, and they've got Jan Sommer in post. Jacek Francesco Acerbi, 35-year-old centre-back, is starting for Inter. Alessandro is also in centre-back. Hakan Çalhanoğlu, Henrik Mkhitaryan is in the team. Federico Di Marco, Nicolò Barella, Denzel Dumfries, Lautaro Martinez, and the goal scorer, Marcus Thuram. We asked for quality football and drama. Well, here we have it. With Inter taking the lead after just 40 seconds here at the Olympic Stadium. Play resumes from that goal kiss. Yes, Bastoni finds Di Marco. Lautaro Martinez into Di Marco with a give and go, but that pass was a bit behind him.
And even though he managed to adjust himself and get the ball under control, DiMarco himself whipped it behind his teammate, Nicola Barella. Here comes Barcelona down the right side. Here's Lamine Yamal, comes infield, shifting and waiting to create the angle. But Inter Milan get the ball away from Hamsway, out for a throw-in.
Or in the opening 3 minutes of the game, you can tell this is going to be end-to-end action. Barcelona now have it all to do. Conceding after just 40 seconds means that they are going to go all out and try and get that equalizer. A win here will be extremely essential for Barcelona if they are to stand a chance of making it through to the final, because Inter at home, just another different animal altogether.
For now though, they have to deal with this Barcelona attack down the right side as Lamine Yamal picks up the ball, running at DiMarco, whips in the cross to the back post. There's no one there to connect. Yann Bissek with a header, Denzel Dumfries with a chance to send it farther away from goal. It's been intercepted by Leandro Balde. Yann Bissek finally with the clearance. Inigo Martinez brings it under control, but that was Barcelona momentarily giving us a glimpse of what to expect. Here comes Dani Olmo, whips way through that Inter defense, but it's the 35-year-old Francesco Acerbi there with a timely intervention. Frankie de Jong. Barca still have possession. Inigo Martinez, Pedri, who scored a goal against Real Madrid on Saturday in the Copa del Rey. Here's the man who created one of the goals, Lamine Yamal, in search of Ferran Torres, but Alessandro Bastoni is there, centered out of play for the kick. Rafinha putting Bastoni under pressure, trying to force the issue and create something. But there again, you see the genius of Lamine Yamal, and you wonder what outcome could have been if it was Robert Lewandowski attacking that.
Probably would have timed his run better and just slotted it in.
Corner kick taken, headed away by Nicolò Barella. So it's a throw-in advantage, Inter. Rafinha again into Pedri. Brings the ball under control, sends it back to the Brazilian Rafinha, who's got DiMarco to contend with. He goes down under the challenge from the Italian, and the referee agrees with him. It's a foul advantage, Barcelona. Clip the ankle of the Brazilian, and the referee saw it even from to walk away. Pedri as Barcelona reaches. Yamal, penalty area, but he's quickly policed by well now contested by two of them to the penalty area. He checks back of one of his teammates finding money. Frankie de Jong, Gerard Martin now. Cross has been headed away by Bastoni. Frankie de Jong goes down under challenge from Bastoni. Half-hearted appeals for a penalty, but the referee says there was no contact in that, and so it goes out of play for a throw-in. Yep, looks like pretty just about
there was a right call, and you could see Frankie de Jong gesturing up to his teammates just to get on with it. He knew he wasn't going to get a penalty for that, but it's a very interesting start to the game. Barcelona have the best attack in the UEFA Champions League season. Inter have the best defense, but it was the best defense scoring after just 40 seconds. And now they can choose to sit back and make it very difficult for Barcelona to carve them open. We know Inter are also really dangerous in transition. So the game is now set up for Inter Milan.
Inigo Martinez, Rafinha, Gerard Martin sends it back in search of Paul Kubasi. He's been an excellent addition to the team since he got promoted into the first team. Here comes Lamine Yamal, comes in field, but Rafinha is there to pick that up. His cross into the penalty area, too close to the goalkeeper. Jan Sommer was going to save those all evening. 7 minutes of action going live. Enjoy 99.7 FM and on hits 103.9 FM. This is the UEFA Champions League semi-final first leg in Barcelona, where the Spanish team is currently trailing Inter by a goal to nil. The most recent meeting of these two sides, the competition, you know that story all too well. in a twist of fate, a bit of chronic ash, controversial indecision. Of course, Jose Mourinho at the heart of, long story short, Inter prevailing by 3-2. Despite having to do much of that reverse fixture without Thiago Motta. Of course, it's a totally different generation of Barcelona who come forward once again down that right side through Lamine Yamal. But as has been the case, it's been